ॐ स्थापकाय च धर्मस्य सर्वधर्मस्वरूपिणे अवतारवरिष्ठाय रामकृष्णाय ते नमः. सो गुड मॉर्निंग. सो द टॉपिक टुडे इज से अ वेरी इंटरेस्टिंग वन, दैट इज द श्री रामकृष्ण एंड द स्पिरिचुअल क्राइसिस ऑफ मॉडर्न एज. हाउ टू इंट्रोड्यूस श्री रामकृष्ण and the relevance of his teachings to our times is not an easy task. On the one hand, he was a very traditional, very conservative, not a conventionally educated person, not illiterate, but still only marginally educated. And he lived in the mid-19th century. He was, historically speaking, a contemporary of Charles Darwin, Karl Marx, Engels, and many of the early radical humanists of 19th century. So he came at a time when religion itself was being questioned by modern scientists and also by the evolutionary scientists. The anti-creationists, as they used to be called. You know, the publication of Darwin's Origin of Species and the publication of Communist Manifesto and Das Kapital. And before that, even the emergence of utopian socialism, Fabian socialism, all these have created lots of problems for conventional believers in religion in the latter half of 19th century. But you'll be surprised when I tell you that latter half of 19th century was spiritually more enlightened than our own times. It may be not a very pleasant remark if you look at the history of the great original free thinkers and seekers who emerged during the post-Darwinian era. After creationism was questioned by the evolutionary thinkers, and after belief in an uncompromising creator God was being questioned by radical humanists, there was an independent research in the search and a quest for some kind of a religion which can withstand the assaults of modern science and modern technology. And that is the time when Sri Ramakrishna was living in Calcutta. It was not the center of the world at that time, but it was the second most important city in British Empire after London. And in many ways, a very crucial meeting point of all that is Western and all that is Eastern. And as a result, a new quest and search emerged for a new paradigm of spirituality, a new paradigm of religion which refuses to accept boundaries of belief and non-belief, boundaries of culture, nationality, and so on. And that was the time when Sri Ramakrishna lived. And we are talking about these teachings and their relevance to our own times. That's where we stand. Now, surprisingly, in many of Sri Ramakrishna's parables, and incidentally, he used to teach in parables, like the great Buddha, like Christ, and like innumerable ancient Vedic sages, he used parables as a means, as a tool for communicating to common people. Now I'm going to discuss one single parable, and if possible I may take up a few more parables, but one parable that is strikingly relevant to our own times. It's a very short one, and after reading that, It just may take less than 2 minutes, and then I will come to what it really means to our own times. The parable is about a poor but happy, contented person. He was a hairdresser. In those days, it used to be called barber in the Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna. And he was a very happy person, very contented, not very rich, but certainly not poor, because he was the special barber or hairdresser of the local king. And one day, he was going from his home to the king's palace, which took him along an isolated road surrounded by forests, thick forests all around. But he used to worry about, well, if I'm very happy right now, but maybe a little more money can make my life more happy. I will have better times. He used to worry about this in his mind all the time. And then, as he was passing through the thick forest, there was a tree, and from behind the tree, he heard a noise. "Do you want the 7 jars? That was the question. "Will you accept 7 jars full of gold?" He heard a voice coming from behind a large banyan tree. He looked around, he may have thought, actually there was no real need for him to listen or take seriously this inquiry. But anyway, well, yes, I shall accept the 7 jars. Here, he said, and the other voice, the strange voice, replied, "Go home, I have carried jars to your home." And this gentleman went home and he found 7 jars lined up in his courtyard. And now he was very happy. 7 jars of gold, you can imagine. Remember, he was a very poor man, not a huge bank balance, and he was getting this huge wealth. He had every reason. Well, no, I didn't need to worry about it. I don't need to know. I can have resigned from my job, go to Hawaii and buy a home. But I didn't think those terms. What he did, that's what we are going to discuss. And that is why it's relevant to our times. Now, he opened the lid of the jars, the 6 jars. They were all filled with gold coins. The seventh jar he opened, and he found it was not completely full. Maybe 100 more coins can fill the jar. So he was thinking, if only I had 7 full jars, that's where human civilization comes into question. See, today we have science, we have technology, we have limitless wealth, and we have the resources to extract from deep down the earth all that the earth hides from our view. Gold, aluminium, everything, even rare earth materials also, which must be more precious than gold in modern times. But the point is, we are not happy. And that disease was the problem with this poor man. And what he did later, that shows our true predicament in our own times. His one single purpose was to see all the 7 jars filled with gold. Just like, for example, if he had got a wonderful home, Rolls Royce car, a big high paying job, everything, and in the computer screen you can see a huge figure, several billions of dollars, hundreds of billions of dollars. Still, we want a few more millions, few more thousands. And we spend all our time, all energy, all resources, all tools and powers and gifts of science and technology to somehow earn a few more gold coins. a few more thousands of dollars to be added to this bank balance of hundreds of billions of dollars that you already have. Why does this happen? How should this happen? Because there is a basic inherent problem with the human mind, that desire can never have an end. Human desire for empirical things is unquenchable, intrinsically unquenchable. So even though we may have limitless wealth, everything, still we can never think, well, this is enough for me. Intellectually we know, oh, that's an important subtle point. Every human being can give a long talk on contentment. So we can see these motivational speeches. And many of them are absolutely the devoted followers of this humble barber. Because they talk about, you know, sometimes a man could be total failure, absolute disaster in business, because he made many mistakes. So he brings a new series of motivational speech, 10 mistakes that I made that I don't want you to make. And that becomes a source of wealth. So somehow, even selling our own failures, our own miseries, we want to earn a few more gold coins to fill the seventh jar. That is what is happening to the barber. So what happened was, he was earlier, he was contented, he was happy, he was moderate, and his wife also had enough food, children were well fed, a moderately good home, everything was wonderful. But suddenly his master, the king, started wondering, what's the matter with this poor fellow? He was getting thinner and thinner. His body was becoming fragile. He looked famished, and he noticed he was wearing rags. And his wife also looked so famished because he was not giving food to them. And his children were also famished. He was not giving food to the children. Before he got these 7 jars of gold, they were well fed. He was happy. The children were happy. They went to school regularly. The wife also was happy. But now the wife, the children, and this poor fellow, he is in rags. Why? Because he started saving money. He stopped buying things, he stopped going for shopping, he stopped buying clothes for his wife and children because he wanted to save that money. Why? He wanted to earn a few more gold coins so that he can fill the seventh jar. And then the king asked him, what's the matter with you? Well, you know, the king was a very wise man. He had gone through this earlier. The king also once had gone through this, and then he had learned his lesson. The next time, when the king was walking through the same road, the same voice asked him, well, do you want 7 jars again? He said, then he asked the voice, can I make use of the whatever you have given me? The voice said, no, you can only try to fill the 7th jar. But you cannot take 1 coin from any of these jars and go for shopping and use it for your own daily expenses. So the 7th jar represents the human predicament in modern times, the unquenchable thirst, desire for more and more enjoyments. And the king eventually doubled his salary. He was a very compassionate person. So he doubled the salary of the poor man. And he thought maybe this time, because he did not know, at that time he did not know that this man had met with this strange voice and had got these 7 jars of gold. Before knowing about it, when he noticed his own humble barber getting more and more famished, miserable looking. Children also looked so miserable and famished. Then the king wondered, maybe, well, I shall increase your salary. And he was very happy. Even after increasing the salary, doubling the salary, he found only the barber's, the humble man's, his conditions, his misery had doubled. His children looked more famished, and his house was in a state of disrepair, and his wife was going about in rags. His own clothes were all torn because he was saving every penny he had, every cent he had, to buy a few more gold coins so that he can fill the seventh jar and happy about it. So in modern times you can see, let's say somebody who has got $1 billion or maybe $10 billion. What will you do with that? You know, money is only an idea in our mind. In early days, during the time when we had barter system, medieval times, whatever money you had was visible. It took the form of land, properties, maybe slaves, servants, luxurious clothes. That is how in medieval times, a rich man showed off his wealth. But today you may be the richest man in the world. The money you have got is shown as a computer figure. You click it, it becomes something else. Even if you have $1 billion, you cannot eat gold. You may eat from a golden plate, but you cannot eat golden plate. Or you can eat from golden plate, not the golden plate itself. So money actually, what we call Maya. The Maya is, Maya hides the reality, and it also conceals the reality from our perception. And in its place, it projects a false reality. So Maya in Vedanta, you know, Maya is Vikshepa Shakti, Avarana Shakti. First of all, it covers, it gives a blindfold on your face, and then it projects a false reality before you. Like that, modern science and technology and all the wealth that we have got is like the seventh jar. It remains unfulfilled. You can never fill it up. So the king asked him, look here, hello my man, did you get the seven jars of gold? Because the king had earlier, as I mentioned earlier, he had gone through this experience. And he asked that strange voice who offered the seven jars of gold, can I really make use of these seven jars for my daily life? I have my expenses, my kingdom, I can feed the poor people in my country, I can raise a new army for the defense of the country, I can increase the living standard of my subjects. So can I make use of these seven jars? The voice said, no, you can keep in your home, that's all. Then I don't want them. The king was wiser, he rejected the seven jars. So he knew this, so he asked this poor man, have you got the seven jars of gold? He said, yes. How did you know about it? Because I know that's what happens to a person. Because his health failed, he didn't have money for treatment, his children stopped going home, he didn't have money to pay fees, his wife had no clothes, was going about in rags. These are the signs of a person who gets seven jars of gold. In modern times, we may dress very well, we may go to Ivy elite schools, but our mind, mentally, spiritually, we will still be living below poverty line. We will be walking about in rags. Because desire, by its very nature, is limitless, it has no end. So that's a great lesson that Sri Ramakrishna teaches you. Now, a parable is something like a miracle. A parable is so eloquent, so loud, and so explicit that you cannot hide the truth, the message, you cannot run away from it. So Sri Ramakrishna was teaching a great message for our own times. science, technology, industrialization, globalization, information technology, computer technology, artificial intelligence, all these have created wealth, comforts. And as I mentioned earlier, you know, wealth in beyond a limit is only a computer digit figure, nothing more. You lose it, you get it back. That's all. You don't get anything. Of course, if you lose everything, you lose your home. That's a different matter. You won't be able to medical treatment. But beyond a limit, beyond a specific limit, wealth is only an unnecessary luxury. It brings misery. It brings poverty of mind. It brings disease of the mind. That's what Sri Ramakrishna wanted to teach. It's a very, very important lesson you find. Another very, very touching parable is totally a different story, a different message. It is called the parable of the Homa bird. Now, this Homa, according to some linguist, it is a Zoroastrian word. The old Zoroastrian language, that means the language that was prevalent in Iran, today's Iran, at that time called Persia, before the Islamization of Persia in the 7th century AD, they had a magnificent culture and tradition and civilization, which is so broad-minded, so tolerant, so pluralistic, very similar to the ancient Vedic culture. It is built upon the foundation of plurality, compassion, toleration, and broad-mindedness. The pre-Islamic civilization of Persia, what we now call Iran. And the language was very similar. It's called Zoroastra. Zend Avesta is the central canon of this religion, Zoroastrian religion. Zoroastra was the teacher. It was almost like one of the Vedic rishis. So language of this Zend-Avesta, the old Persian, is very similar to the, of course, it's no more spoken, it's no more, in its pure form, according to linguists, it is not exactly in use in our own time. Very similar to the Vedic language. So the word Soma in Sanskrit becomes Homa in the old Zoroastrian language. So Homa bird is nothing but Soma bird. This is mentioned in the Vedic literature. The story I shall read out. The Vedas speak of the Homa bird. It lives very high in the sky. There the mother bird lays her eggs. She lives so high that the egg falls for many days. While falling, it is hatched. The chick continues to fall, and that also goes for many days. In the meantime, the chick develops eyes. Coming near the earth, it becomes conscious of the world. It realizes it will meet certain death, and it hits the ground. Then it gives a shrill cry and shoots up towards its mother. This idea behind. It's also, in a way, it's a metaphor for modern civilization, modern culture. Now, when industrialization, this quest for wealth that we discussed in the previous parable, when this reaches a particular limit, what happens is we reach a point where we feel that complete destruction is imminent. It is inescapable. That's the only way this continues, these explosive developments of weapon technology, which is a very demonical manifestation of modern science and technology. It can only lead to some kind of a total extinction of humanity. So like the bird that slowly falls down, the tiny little baby bird, and when it's just about to reach the ground, hit the rock bottom, the earth, at that time it realizes, well, if I don't reverse my direction, I will meet with self-destruction. Immediately, it realizes, it moves he starts moving upward. Similarly, you find in our own life, there are situations when we feel that when we reach a point, if we don't reverse our direction, we may end up with total distinction. This could happen in individual life also. And also, if we look at the human civilization as a whole, it could happen, it is inescapable. So Sri Ramakrishna is referring to this. What is this hitting the ground, self-destruction? What is the implication of moving, reversing the direction and moving upward? It means realizing the true meaning of human life. And in Sri Ramakrishna's language, the true meaning of human life is God realization. That's what you find in the popular Sri Ramakrishna literature. God realization is the ultimate and the supreme goal of human existence. This is what you find in the gospel. He repeats again and again. So when we get immersed in worldliness, in worldly desires, as you find, you know, going on struggling to fill the seventh jar, selling your home, starving your children, impoverishing your wife, and again building up wealth more and more without making use of it for anyone, what happens is it is some kind of a self-destruction. So when we reach a specific point, we suddenly realize we reverse direction. So Sri Ramakrishna says we should reverse the direction of our own evolution and understand the true meaning of human existence, which according to him is realization of God. Now when you talk about realization of God in modern times, the 21st century, in 2026, it could be terribly misunderstood, because the most unfortunate person in the world is God himself, because there are so many people who are preaching him, who claim to represent him, who paint him in different terrible colors. And so God has got a very bad reputation. He would rather keep away indoors. He will not come out of his home because he doesn't want bad publicity. Because people depict God as a most uncompromising, absolutely dictatorial, never willing to take no for an answer. That's the kind of language. But Sri Ramakrishna's idea of God is different. That's what I'm coming to. Sri Ramakrishna says, it is okay to believe in a God who creates this world, whom you pray to in a place of worship, whose teachings you read in a scripture, whom you preach, wonderful. But that's only the beginning, the kindergarten, the primary school in spiritual evolution. If you just believe and you begin your spiritual life with a belief in a God who creates this world, is totally uncompromising, who wants you to join him instead of joining another kind of God, then there is no end to this misery. So Sri Ramakrishna says the ultimate purpose of this quest for God realization should be the manifestation of that godliness in our own hearts and manifesting that divinity in our actions, in our words, in our behavior, and more importantly, in our interaction with our fellow human beings. And that's the actual meaning of God realization in Sri Ramakrishna literature. You know, I'm specifically emphasizing this point because 21st century, God, as mentioned earlier, is a very bad reputation. God is often portrayed a very, very uncompromising dictator, a tyrant. That's not the idea of God according to Sri Ramakrishna. According to him, God is the God of everyone. He is present in everything and present everywhere. In fact, Sri Ramakrishna very often echoes an important definition of an ideal devotee of God that is found in one of the classical books on Hindu devotional philosophy. It's called Bhagavata Purana. There's a long dialogue, a discussion between a very enlightened king, a philosopher king called Nimi, and 9 sages who happened to visit him in his court. In ancient times, these sages and philosophers used to spend their time, their whole lifetime, wandering from place to place. And they used to visit kings in their courts and discuss many things. So during one of those discussions, the king puts a question to these sages. The name of the sage you find Ekadasa Skandha, 11th section, 11th book of Bhagavata Purana, 2nd chapter. And the list of the 9 sages is meant Kavir Hari Andariksha Prabuddha Pipalayana Avir Hotrothar Durmiras Chamasa Karabhajanaha. So Kavi Hari Andariksha Prabuddha Pipalayana Avir Hotra Durmiras Chamasa Karabhajana. 9 sages. Anyway, this is not very relevant for our context here. Just mentioned, that's all. So in the 2nd chapter, there is a discussion. The king puts a very significant question. Who is a true devotee of God? And what's the nature of God? And it is in that sense that Sri Ramakrishna says that God realization is the supreme purpose of human life. So when we are about to hit the ground in the pursuit of wealth, we must, when we realize we don't have much to go before self-destruction, we have to reverse the direction and move in the opposite direction and move towards God realization. So that is mentioned in this book. The actual Sanskrit text is this. That is, the meaning is this. Sarva bhudeshu yapasyet bhagavat bhavam atmanaha bhudani bhagavadi atmani esha bhagavadottamaha. This is a text, Sanskrit text. In the 11th section, 11th book, Ekadasa Skandha, 2nd chapter, one of the sages called Andariksha gives an answer to the king's question as to what is the meaning of God and who is a real devotee of God, who is the highest devotee of God. So the answer is in English language, it means this: the one who sees, who can experience the presence of God in everyone, in all human beings, not only human beings, whole creation. And the presence of the whole creation, all the human beings in God. So you should see the presence of the divine in everyone and the presence of everyone in God. Now when you reach this level of spiritual experience, what happens to you is, in simple word, you become a good human being. And being a good human being is the actual purpose of all religion, should be the actual purpose. Any religion, any tradition that tells you, if you are a true devotee of God, you should do maximum harm to all other people who don't share your own view of God. That is the very antithesis of spirituality. Just the opposite of what we said now. A religion or any tradition that teaches us, but that doing violence against our fellow human beings, you can be in the good books of our God, that is the very, and it is the very opposite of, the polar opposite of true religion. True religion, as mentioned in this book, is this. A true religion is something, is a spiritual experience that enables us to feel the presence of God in everyone and the presence of everyone in God. It means all activities, all of our actions become like worship of God. Every word becomes sacred. Every movement becomes an opportunity to practice spirituality. And because we can't see anything in this world except a manifestation of God. It doesn't mean that trees and mountains and all people walking in the streets are gods and goddesses, not at all. This can be very, very misleading, sometimes very consciously misleading interpretation. What it means is, you cannot do harm to anything in this world or anyone in this world if you really pray to God, if you really are a devotee of God, if you are a truly spiritual person. And in modern times, Swami Vivekananda extends this definition even beyond this, even further beyond this level. He says, you live your life in such a way that God will accept you even if you don't accept Him. That means even non-believers have a place in God's empire, God's home. That's the idea behind it. So Sri Ramakrishna says, when in a pursuit of wealth, enjoyments, and fulfillment of our own desires, if we forget our own true nature, what happens is total self-destruction is the only imminent, the inevitable, the inescapable destiny that is waiting for us. So that's one of the important messages that you find in this parable of the Homa bird. It is its immediate relevance is to a devotee who has a desire to practice spirituality, but his own emotions and feelings and samskaras are not permitting him. So he should strive hard to reverse his own direction, and he should redirect his energies and his time in the direction of God. That's the immediate relevance. And there is another very, very interesting, it's very, very similar in some ways, but it has got its own relevance. Sri Ramakrishna has got another very slightly funny example, parable. And he's talking about a kite and fish, that's the name of the parable. A kite is a small bird, you know. So Sri Ramakrishna says, a kite somehow caught a fish, and then it got hooked to this beak, and then it was moving forward. At that time, a crowd of crows chased it from all directions, disturbing its movement. Finally, this kite got exhausted. It dropped the fish, and as soon as he lost that fish, the crows also went away. The kite could save its own life. This is another very related parable. That's one thing. Another one which I'm going to discuss is about the decisions that we make in our spiritual life. It is about a man who showed strong determination in his spiritual pursuit. You should just read, it's a very short one. A man was going to bathe. He has his towel on his shoulder. So his wife said to him, you are worthless, you are getting old, and still you cannot give up some of your habits. You cannot live a single day without worldly desires. But look at that man, what a renouncer he is. So remember this very interesting scene in a village, let's say in medieval times. There was one householder, and every day he used to be very meticulous. We'll go for bathing every day. He'll come back, have his food, go to nearby temple, everything, well-disciplined life. So one day, his wife, maybe she was not in a good mood, told him, you fellow, you're always chasing your worldly desires. Look at the other man, the neighboring home. He's a good role model for you. You should follow his example. This man asked him, why? What has he done? The wife says, he has 16 wives and is renouncing them one by one. You'll never be able to renounce. So remember, renunciation in installments. He said, remember, this is a metaphor, it's only a story. So the wife is telling him, the neighbor has 16 wives and is renouncing them one by one. You will never be able to renounce. Husband, renouncing his wife one by one, you are crazy. You won't be able to renounce anyone. If a man wants to renounce, does he do it by little? Wife was smiling. She says, still he's better than you, because you cannot, you have only one wife, you are not able to renounce her. Means you are not able to renounce me even. So actually the wife happens to be a great woman, because she could instill in that man a true sense of renunciation? That's what we are going to find out. The husband, you are silly. You don't understand. He cannot renounce, but I can. See, here I go. Remember, he had his towel on his shoulder. In ancient, let's say in medieval India, tropical climate, you remember, they take bath in the village ponds or rivers. That's what they do in the tropical hot weather. So this man was about to go to take his bath the nearby pond with a towel on his shoulders. He was about to start walking in that direction. So wife must have just, I say, in a light way, maybe it's a joke, must have told him, "You fellow, you are living a very worldly life. Look at the man nearby. He's renouncing one after another, renouncing installments. He's a good example for you." The man says, if he's renouncing in installments, he'll never be able to renounce anything. Renunciation is a matter of a strong will. You renounce, then you don't look back. You cannot renounce in installments. Renunciation should be done with one strong determination. It's a matter of split-second decision. That's what the man is implying. And give me an example of himself. What he did, you know, he was about to, as I mentioned, start walking towards the pond to take bath. He continued walking. He said, "I'm not coming back." So he could renounce in one split second. Anyway, this is a great lesson, not for in our common life. What it means is, when we take decisions, let us say, there are many things in our life that we don't want to. We would rather be happy to get rid of many wrong habits. In modern times, for example, drug addiction, alcoholism, or addiction to, let's say, internet, all these are different manifestations of problems that people are struggling to escape from, but unable to do that. So every time there is this struggle is going on with our own mind, with our own, let's say, negativity, built up negativity. People who accumulated certain habits eventually realize that those habits are a big burden, big liability. Everyone knows drugs and alcohol are the most explicit examples, but there are many such examples. In modern times, maybe internet addiction and so on. So on the one hand, there is a realization that it is something to be got rid of. We know it very well, and we sincerely want to get rid of, and we are very honest about it. But it seems that there's a negative samskara, what you call negative force, seems to prevent us from actually implementing our own sincere wish to get rid of those negative habits. So very often, there are two kinds of reasons from yoga's perspective. One reason is our own accumulated negative samskaras stand as some stumbling block, is a big dead end, big stumbling block, blocking our own efforts to get rid of what we sincerely want to get rid of, but we cannot. In this case, in the Sri Ramakrishna parable, renunciation is the word used. In modern times, let's say, this sincere desire to get rid of what we don't want, what we know to be a big problem, a toxic poison for our own spiritual life, we would rather get rid of them. And when we try, our own negative samskaras create the stumbling block. This is one kind of problem. Another kind of problem is something different, more physically visible, more explicit, less subtle, more gross. Certain things that we are used to doing physically that we can change if we take a strong decision. So people who want to get rid of what they don't want to practice, what they want to escape from. Sometimes their effort is blocked by procrastination, means postponing for another occasion. That may be manifestation of negative samskaras, or it could also be a kind of half-hearted or lack of sincerity. So Sri Ramakrishna says, a truly spiritual person should have a strong will and a strong determination. And that strong will and strong determination may be necessary for achieving greatness in material life. To be a military general, to be a Napoleon, you have to be a man of strong will. Even to be a demon like Hitler, you have to be a man of strong will. That's an example of strong will used for the most negative purpose. And for becoming a Buddha, you have to have a strong will. Look at Buddha. Buddha had a strong will, that's why he became a Buddha. So, all these great qualities, like sense of total dedication, sincerity, and a strong iron will, can be put to positive use. That's what Sri Ramakrishna says. To accomplish anything in our life, we need this strong determination. That's why in the Gita, Sandushta Sadadam Yogi Yadatma Dridanischeha. So this comes in the 13th verse perhaps in the 12th chapter of Gita, Bhakti Yoga. Lord Krishna gives a list of the necessary prerequisites, the necessary qualities, qualifications of an ideal devotee. And he begins the list. He says, Sandushta, he should be a man of contentment. Without contentment, you cannot keep your mind in a state of tranquility and peace. And you should have self-control, yatatma. And then the third quality, which according to some commentators, is the most important quality. Because without that higher quality, you won't be able to resist the negative impulses of your own mind. You have to face enemies from outside, but you also have to face enemies from within ourselves. So, to face these problems of either addictions or procrastinations, which are stumbling blocks in our path, not only in spiritual life, in ordinary material life also, these can be problems. So one important quality that Lord Krishna mentions in the Gita as a very important quality for a true devotee is Dridha Nischeha, means a strong iron determination. That's why Sri Ramakrishna says, in life, to be able to live a good life, to be able to harmonize the good things of modern age, modern science, modern technology, also the good, great lessons for ancient traditions, we need this viveka, which is a sense of discerning wisdom, and also strong will. That is the emphasis on this parable. So Sri Ramakrishna's parables are very, very significant. You should be into. It can be interpreted in any way, because a parable is like an elastic. Otherwise, in a parable, if you compress the parable, if you reduce the parable within the context of the historical context or the theological context, in the case of Christ's parables, you know, then it makes no sense. So parable as a relevance that transcends times, cultures, and civilizations. A parable has got a universal relevance. So many of these parables are rooted in a supreme manifestation of spiritual wisdom. And that can be applied in any age. That's why parables are more eloquent, more explicit. Maybe more, I mean, the loudest means of, the most eloquent means of teaching spiritual philosophy. So I just chose three of Sri Ramakrishna's parables and tried to bring out some of the important points of relevance to our own times. Thank you. ओम शांति 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 ही हरि ओम तत्सत् श्री राम कृष्णार्पणमस्तु।